This is Case Closed, crime stories from the golden age of radio. Welcome back to Case Closed, your weekly hour of old-time radio crime brought to you every Wednesday by RelicRadio.com. Our first story this week comes from the casebook of Gregory Hood. We'll hear The Eloquent Corpse from October 14, 1946. After that, it's Out of Mind from Let George Do It, his story from May 2, 1949.
Petri Wine brings you The Casebook of Gregory Hood. Tonight, the Petri family, the family that took time to bring you good wine, invite you to listen to the story of The Eloquent Corpse, another exciting adventure from The Casebook of Gregory Hood. But before we get started, I'd like to tell you about one swell dessert. Chilled fruit with Petri California Muscatel wine. It's really wonderful and so easy to fix. Just put chilled fruits in a dish and pour chilled Petri Muscatel wine over them. That's all there is to it. And is it good? You just couldn't ask for anything better than Petri Muscatel with chilled fruits. Just be sure you get Petri Muscatel. Petri Muscatel is such a fine wine, beautifully golden in color, with a marvelous, full, rich flavor. Believe me, Petri Muscatel is really good. And you can serve that Petri Muscatel proudly, because those five letters, P-E-T-R-I, spell the proudest name in the long history of fine wine. Petri. Once again, it's Monday night in San Francisco, and time to hear another chapter from the casebook of that celebrated importer and man about town, Gregory Hood. Tonight's story begins in a small and shoddy waterfront bar in San Francisco, a bar affectionately referred to by its regular customers as Bottleneck Bill. The barkeep, a gentleman by the name of Bill, stands talking to his only patron, a small, softly spoken man who sits on a bar stool opposite.
How you been, Larry?
I've been okay, Bill.
Yeah, what's new?
That's something I want to show you.
Go ahead, the place is empty.
Get a load of these. Ever see coins like that?
Hey, what kind of crazy moolah is that? All screwy shapes with funny letters on them. What are they, lad?
That's what I want to find out. I took them to a hawk shop on Market, but the guy acted kind of funny, so I screamed. I got a hunch they're worth big dough.
Where'd you get them, lad?
Now, you know better than to get curious like that, Bill.
Okay, so they're hot. You know I don't handle that kind of stuff.
Take it easy. I'm not asking you to handle it.
And why did you come to me?
Because you know people, I don't. People that can be useful. Play ball, Bill, and I'll cut you in.
What's the deal?
You know that guy, Gregory Hood, don't you?
Sure, I know him here every once in a while.
And all this old-fashioned, hearty, crafty stuff is his racket. He'd know what it's worth.
If you think he'll fence for you, you're crazy. He's strictly on the level.
All I want from him is information.
You want me to take this stuff to him?
He's still a rat. He might call in on the cops. This stuff's red hot, Bill, and it's liable to pop like dynamite. I gotta dress this up a little. They say this Hood guy's a sucker for dames. I figured we might send Norma.
Wait a minute, Larry. Norma's my girl.
Sure, sure she is. But all I'm asking to do is go and see this Hood guy. And I got the whole thing doped out. Now, here's what we'll do, Bill. And I bet he falls for it.
Well, how do you do, Miss Haywood? Sit down, won't you?
Thank you, Mr. Hood.
Oh, would you like a cigarette?
No, thank you. Mr. Hood, I've come to you because I'm told you're the one person who can help me.
Well, I'll do my best. What's the trouble?
Well, I received a package through the mail today. This coin was inside it.
May I look at it?
There.
Thank you.
I could see it was old and probably valuable, so I brought it to you.
Well, I'll say it's valuable. This is a perfect specimen of 16th century Korean money. There's no mistaking it. Oh, if you want to sell this, Miss Haywood, I'd be very happy to buy.
Well, that isn't exactly why I came here, Mr. Hood.
Huh?
I want you to help me get hold of the rest of them.
The rest? You mean you have a collection of these coins?
Read this note, Mr. Hood. I think it will explain everything. It came in the package this morning.
Hmm. If you want the rest of the collection, come to Bottleneck Bill's, ask for Larry.
Mr. Hood, I'm afraid to go there. It sounds like some sort of trap.
Let me get a couple of things straight. Had you ever heard of this collection of coins before?
Never. And I don't know anyone named Larry.
Well, if it's a trap, why bait it with a valuable coin like this? I don't get it, but I'm mighty curious.
Then perhaps you'll
keep that date for you? With Hayward, I can hardly wait.
Hi, Greg.
Hello, Bill.
What'll it be?
Let's have a glass of sherry, please.
Okay. You haven't been around lately, Greg.
No. What's new?
Mighty little. Huh? This is sherry.
Thanks. Bill.
Yeah.
You know a guy named Larry?
Larry? Oh, yeah. Yeah, he's sitting in that booth over there. Said he was expecting someone, only it was a dame.
Well, he'll be disappointed. How well do you know the guy, Bill?
Well, he's new around here. Been in a couple of times, that's all.
Think he's okay?
Yeah, I'd say so. Seems to have plenty of jack. Talks smooth.
Not necessarily the hallmarks of a good citizen. Much obliged, Bill.
Yeah, you're welcome, Greg.
Larry?
Yeah?
I know I'm a poor substitute for Norma, but I'm keeping her appointment.
Norma Hayward? What do you know about her?
Recognize this coin?
Huh? Who are you, mister?
The name's Hood. Gregory Hood.
Why did Norma go to you?
Mainly because I'm in the importing business, I guess. She wanted to know if the coin was valuable.
Is it?
Certainly is. I'm curious to see the rest of the collection.
Okay. Since you're acting for Norma, I'll show it to you. How about coming up to my hotel?
Before I do that, Larry, I'd like a little more dope on this deal. Norma said she'd never heard of you or the coin. What's the tie-in?
Well, you see, a pal of mine had a crush on Norma. His name doesn't matter because he's dead now. So, when he knew he was dying, he gave me the collection. Picked it up in China. He told me to track down Norma and give it to her.
Well, what was the idea of sending just one of the coins?
Well, he wanted me to check up on her. If she wasn't hitched up to some other guy, then he wanted her to have the whole collection.
And you figured that one of the coins would intrigue her, she'd keep the date, and you'd be able to do your checking up, huh?
Yeah, that's it, Mr. Hood.
Instead of which, you scared her and she sent me, and I'm afraid I can't tell you a thing about her private life.
I can wait. Why don't we go up to our hotel, huh? You're an expert. I'd like to get your opinion on the stuff.
All right, Larry, let's go. Larry, this is one of the finest collections of ancient coins I ever laid eyes on.
Valuable, huh?
Yes, indeed. Look here. This copper coin with the square hole in the middle. That's Tian Feng period. This gold penny's English Henry III. Yes, my friend Norma would be a wealthy girl if she ever inherited these.
That's the way my pal wanted it. Too bad he died.
Hmm? Too bad he never lived.
What? I don't get you, Mr. Hood.
Don't play me for a sucker any longer, Larry. I spotted this gag half an hour ago. I was stringing along with it because I was curious.
I still don't get it.
Listen, Larry, you read too many whodunits. I noticed your very complete collection of mystery fiction when I first came in. They've overdeveloped your imagination. I never heard such a corny plot as the one you dreamed up to get me here.
Now what would my motive be for lying?
That's easy. You've got stolen goods. You don't know what they're worth, and before you go to a fence, you want to get an expert's appraisal. So you dream up the idea of a girl as decoy and doing the whole wacky routine.
Good, you're a smart man.
Thank you. But you don't have to be smart to figure this one out, my friend. As a matter of fact, I'm insulted that you thought I'd fall for it.
Are you also smart enough to keep your mouth shut? You know, I could make it well worth your while, Hood.
Next move's bribery, huh? Then comes coercion, I'm sure. No, Larry, no dice. If I turned crook, I'd go into the big time.
And you're not leaving here.
Oh, you want to play rough, huh?
I am.
So I read too many detective stories, do I, Mr. Gregory Hood? We'll see about that. Hello. Give me room 212. Hank? This is Larry. I'm in my room. Come up here right away. Don't bring Louie with you. And don't ask questions. We got work to do.
Yeah. Yeah, I got someone here who I want to get rid of.
Who is he, Larry?
A guy by the name of Gregory Hood.
Why'd you let him have it?
He spotted my gig. He knows the coins are hot. He turned us in.
Why don't we finish him off?
No need to get mixed up in a murder, that Pink.
What are you going to do with him?
We'll get him down the fire escape and into your car. And drive him out onto the Presidio and let him sleep it off.
Then he wakes up and brings a cop straight here? Nuts to that.
I'm the boss, Hank. What I say goes.
Didn't Louie and me help you in a snatch? Won't we stand to go on the spot with you? This guy slaps the cops on us? They'll come straight here.
As soon as we got him out of here, I'm checking out and leaving town.
Yeah? How about Louie and me? Supposing we don't want to blow town. Maybe you're thinking of going by yourself and taking a grab with you, huh? Are you a lousy double-crosser? That was your plan, right?
You're crazy. Hey, what are you putting those gloves on?
So I'm going to finish this guy off. I don't want to leave no fingerprints. I'll give him a couple of jabs with his knife. He won't feel nothing.
Hank, don't be a dope. Give me that knife.
Yeah, try and get it.
Give it to me.
Okay, here it is. You always like to give orders. Let's see how you can give them with a knife in your belly. Give me 212. Yeah. Hello, Louie. This is Hank. Look, I'm in Larry's room. Come right up, will you? I don't think the boss is feeling so good.
Hey, Hank, why'd you slice him for?
Yeah, he's gonna blow town, Louie. Leave us to take the rap.
No.
He ain't dead yet.
Here. Help me put these gloves of mine on the other stiff.
He dead, too?
No. I relayed him out with a blackjack. He's only unconscious.
Why are you putting your gloves on him?
Now, look, you won't get it, Louie, but I figured out a very neat frame for Larry's murder, see? I put my gloves on his hood guy. We scram, put in a call to the cops. And when they come here, what do they find?
You know, I can get that. They find Larry dead with a knife in him, and they find this guy wearing your gloves.
Sure. There are no prints on a knife, so what did he say? They say this Gregory Hood guy has knocked him off. I'm in the clear.
Yeah. Gee, Hank, that's smart.
Sure it is. You and me will blow town with them coins.
Hey, look at Larry. He's drawing something on the floor in red ink.
Ink? It must have spilled when the table tipped over. Hey. It's an arrow. And it's pointing right at Gregory Hood. What a swell. Thanks, Larry. You're helping me put the finger on the wrong guy.
Wood and Company Importers.
This is Sanderson Taylor. Is Greg there?
No, Mr. Taylor, he isn't, and I'm worried about him. I was going to call you.
What's wrong with her?
Well, he went out of the office just after lunch. He said he'd only be gone half an hour, and he had two very important appointments this afternoon, but he hasn't been back, and he hasn't called.
Well, I've known him to switch plans, but he always keeps in touch. You say where he was going?
Yes, Mr. Taylor, to a place he called Bottleneck Bill.
Bottleneck Bill's? Oh, yes, I know that. So that's a tough hangout. Thank you, Miss Ferris.
You're going over there?
Right away. Looks like one case of Gregory Hood, but I may have to solve.
While we're waiting for Sandy to catch up with Gregory Hood, I'd like to make a suggestion. It's simply this. Whenever you're having any kind of peach dessert, be sure Petri California Muscatel wine is on the table, too. Like with peach cake, peach cookies, peach shortcake, or even if you're serving a delicious dish of chilled canned peaches. Believe me, Petri Muscatel with peaches makes a perfect combination. That Petri Muscatel is such a wonderful wine, so clear, so rich and fragrant, that it's just made for peaches. And in nearly every locality, your Petri wine dealer can give you a little recipe folder showing you how to make unusual and delightful desserts with peaches to serve with Petri Muscatel. But be sure you get Petri Muscatel. I'm our good wine. And now, back to the casebook of Gregory Hood and the adventure of The Eloquent Corpse. As we rejoin our story, Sanderson Taylor, Greg's friend and attorney, is cross-questioning Bill, the owner of the bar known as Bob.
That's all I can tell you, Mr. Taylor. Greg was out with this guy about 3:30.
Uh-huh. You don't know anything about the man except that his name was Larry. Huh?
Yeah, that's right. He's only been in here a couple of times.
You don't know where he lives?
No. Come to think of it, I tell you who might be able to give you the dope.
Well, yeah, who's that?
It's Dottie Bronson. If Larry was in here with her the first time he came in.
Oh, I see. You know her address?
Yeah, sure do. Let's see. 117 Denmark. That's right off market.
Denmark. Dottie Bronson, huh? Yeah. Well, thank you, Bill. How much obliged. Miss Bronson?
Yeah?
I'm a friend of Larry's.
There ain't nothing wrong with Larry, is there?
Well, I don't think so. May I come in?
Sure, come in, mister. You say you're a friend of Larry's. I ain't never seen you before. And you don't look like his type.
Well, I'm not exactly his friend, Miss Bronson.
Then why'd you say you were? What are you, a dick?
No, Miss Bronson. I'm an attorney. And I'm looking for a friend of mine who was last seen with Larry about 2:30 this afternoon.
Yeah? Where were they?
Bottleneck Bill's bar. They left there together. My friend hasn't been heard from since, and I'm worried about
him. Well, I'm worried about Larry. We had a date at 4, and he didn't show up. Called his hotel room and didn't get an answer for a while. A quarter of an hour ago, I got a man talking. Sound like a dick to me, and I'm scared.
Well, so am I. If you give me Larry's address, I'll go over there.
How do I know I can trust you, miss?
Oh, my dear young lady, now...
Well, I guess you're okay. I'll give you the address. I'll go over with you, except the cops know me. I want to watch out for Larry. But... You call me as soon as you get there?
Certainly, and don't you worry, Miss Bronson. I'm sure there's nothing wrong.
Yeah. You ain't worried any more than I am. We're both jittering because there's a chill in the air this time of year. Yeah, okay, mister. I'll be waiting for that call.
Ah, Mr. Taylor, I was wondering when you'd get here.
Oh, Sergeant Barton, what's the homicide squad doing here?
Plenty, and we're lousy with clues. They're even marked out on the floor for us this time. Come in, Mr. Taylor.
Yeah. Is Greg here?
Yeah, but he's still napping, Mr. Taylor, and the police surgeon's working him over.
The surgeon?
Oh, thank you, Daisy, Mr. Taylor. He's okay.
Who's on this kid?
Lieutenant Silvers.
Yes, it's a good thing I am. Greg's in a jam.
But what's happened to him?
He's out cold, slugged with a blackjack. But he's going to be okay.
Yeah, but what happened, Lieutenant?
I'm not sure yet until Greg can start to talk. But you can take a look for yourself. That dead body on the floor with a knife in his belly. We checked his identification. Larry Masterson. He lives here.
And Greg's lying beside him. How is he, Doctor?
He's coming to.
His lips are beginning to move.
Gee, how do you feel, Greg?
I'm just as if I dived headfirst into an empty swimming pool. And I got a good hard skull. Mighty glad to see you, though, Sandy, old bloodhound. Had you trail me out.
Here, Greg, let me give you a hand.
Lieutenant Silvers. And Sergeant Barton, too, this old home week.
Let's hear your story, Hood.
You mean who slugged me? It was a guy by the name of Larry.
And if you look behind you, you'll see the body of the man in question, neatly stabbed through the belly.
Holy smoke. While you were unconscious, Greg, somebody must have come in here and stabbed him.
Hey, where'd I get these gloves? I wasn't wearing them when I came in here.
Well, somebody must have slipped them on you after you passed out.
There's another puzzle, Greg.
Huh?
Look at these diagrams in ink on the floor. And notice the red ink on the dead man's finger.
Yes, the S with the lines through it. But that's a dollar sign.
Yeah. Mary's made an arrow.
An arrow that was pointing at exactly where you were lying, Greg.
Yeah, but the arrow also points to this other drawing. Pretty crude, but it looks like a lighted pipe. Obviously, the dead man is trying to leave a message, the clue to his murderer's identity.
Maybe so, Greg. I haven't much faith in those kind of things.
Well, Lieutenant, you can be sure the dying man didn't do that doodling just to amuse himself.
Sam, how did you hear of the murder?
We got an anonymous phone call telling us to come up here and we'd find a body.
Oh? Well, I think I see it. The killer thought he'd frame me by putting these gloves on me, knowing that a smart murderer uses gloves. Then he'd put in the call for you, figuring he'd walk in and nab me.
Well, it's possible. But I've got to look at facts, Greg. And that arrow was pointing straight at you.
Oh, Lieutenant, you can't suspect Gray.
I can suspect anyone in my business. You never know what a man might do when he's cornered.
Stan, you have a nasty, suspicious mind, and I'm going to prove it to you. The dead man was a whodunit fan.
Yes, I noticed those mystery books on his table over there.
Therefore, he knew about dying message gags.
Well,
he tried to leave one by drawing those ink stains on the floor. After he died, the killer spotted the message and put his gloves on me, the gloves he'd worn when he stabbed Larry. He planned to pin the rap on me.
Prove it to me, Greg. That's all I ask.
You've got to prove it, Greg, to get yourself in the clear.
So, wait a minute. A dollar sign, an arrow, and a pipe. You know, could be I've got it.
Who is it, Greg?
Get me a list of the dead man's friends, guys that were close to him. When I got that, I think I can point out the killer.
List his friends?
Yeah.
Okay, but that's going to take time.
I think I can speed things up a little, Lieutenant. I tracked Greg here tonight by talking to Larry's girlfriend, Dottie Bronson. Let's go and call on her. I bet she'll be glad to help.
Oh, come on. Take it easy, Dottie.
Well, we got him. How'd they do it, Hank?
Oh, somebody sliced him.
You sure he's dead?
Sure, I'm sure. Talked to the hotel manager and he talked to the doc. Just get my hands on that guy. And maybe I can. You'll stick with me.
They get the rat that wiped out Larry. You can bet on it.
Atta gal. You and me can go places, Dottie. You're a smart kid.
Oh, lay off on Hank, will you? Larry ain't even in his casket.
I'll go see who it is, Vic. Now, what do you guys want?
Some information.
Why?
Lieutenant Silvers with homicide.
The dick, huh? Come here to tell me that Larry's rubbed out, I guess.
Well, Miss Bronson, obviously you know that fact. We've come here so that you can help us find his killer.
Who are you? Well, I know your friend. He's the attorney at law who forgets to make phone calls.
I'm sorry about that.
Skip it. I asked you who you were.
The name is Hood. I think I was the next to last person to see Larry alive.
Ain't that pathetic? Did you bring a copy of his will?
Take it easy, Daddy. We're here to help you.
Yeah? Well, who can help me now?
You'd like to find out who killed Larry, wouldn't you?
Sure. What can I do?
Listen to Mr. Hood. Maybe you can help give us the clue to the murder.
Sure. I'll polish up the crystal ball. Shoot, Mr. Hood. What's the $64 question?
A simple one. Give me the names of Larry's closest friends.
That's easy. They only had three. Or close. Me, Louie Horton.
Who's Louie Horton?
Always a dumb lug that wouldn't know which end of a knife was sharpest, even if he sat on it. I worked with Larry.
And who was the third friend, Miss Bronson?
It was me, Lieutenant.
And what's your name?
Jackson.
The first name, Mr. Jackson?
Henry.
They wouldn't by any chance call you Hank, would they, Henry?
Sure. Everybody calls me Hank. Why?
There's your man, Stan. He killed Larry Masterson.
Oh, you're crazy.
No, I think I'm quite on the beam, considering the crack of my dome a little while ago.
What's your alibi, Hank?
If I needed one, Dottie here could give it. I was here with you when Larry was bumped off, wasn't I, Dave?
Well, I...
What time was that, Hank?
About 2:15, wasn't it, Dottie?
That's an interesting alibi. The best the police surgeon could say was the guy died somewhere between 2 and 3. We didn't find the dead body until about 5:30, and we haven't released a word about time yet.
Yeah, you're a little too ready with your alibis, Hank.
Now, listen, miss, I don't know nothing about this.
No, nothing except that you killed him.
Yeah, try and prove
it. Sure, I will. The gloves you planted on me had a slight flaw. There was a hole in the right thumb. There was a thumbprint on the knife, and it wasn't mine. It was yours. We checked it.
Yeah, but great.
In a minute, Stan. How's about that fingerprint, Hank?
Which way was the print pointing, Mr. Smart Guy?
Towards the blade.
Sure. But if you stab a guy, the print would point the other way.
Only if it were a downward blow. This wound was up from under the heart in the best professional stabbing manner, which means that your print was just where it should have been.
But there wasn't no holes in those gloves. Anyway, the arrow was pointing at you.
That's enough, Hank. How did you know that if you weren't there?
Well, I you dirty lout. I was lying when I gave that alibi for you. I ain't seen you all day. And I hope I never see you again.
Now, what do you say, Hank? We've got you every way.
Okay. All right, I kill Larry. He was trying to double-cross me. He had it coming to him. All right, take me away, copper. I don't like the company you keep.
I can understand you're wanting a drink, but did we have to come back to bottleneck Bill?
Well, we came back for two reasons. I wanted to get an aspirin, and this is where I came out on this deal. I'd like to round out the cycle.
Mm-hmm. You know, Greg, I still don't understand what that dollar sign is.
Well, it wasn't a dollar sign, Sandy.
Well, that's the way I learned it at school. You make an S and draw two lines through it.
Very true, but it might also be a way to cross out the letter S. The arrow pointed at the shank of the lighted pipe, cross out the letter S and shank, and you have Hank, the name of the murderer.
Oh, yes, of course. Another thing puzzled me, though, Greg. How did you have time to check the thumbprint on the knife handle?
Well, Sandy, there was no thumbprint.
No?
And there was no hole in the glove. I just said those things to scare Hank into a confession.
Well, Greg, you scared the daylights out of me today.
Me too, Sandy, but don't act mad.
Well, I am mad. You walked into a trap that was clumsily baited. That's not like you.
Sure, but the bait was juicy. Anyway, there's no great harm.
Oh, but there might have been. You darn near got killed and nearly got framed for murder.
All for the sake of the firm, Sandy.
Greg, don't try and tell me you walked into this deal today because you were thinking of the business.
Sure I was. Hood and Company could have come out of this mess very nicely. That was quite a valuable collection of coins. I'll be proud to return them to their owner.
Very altruistic, but we should stop playing cops and robbers.
I'm sorry, Sandy. And I'm darn grateful for your help. Just the same, Sandy, promise me one thing.
Huh? Why, sure. What is it, Greg?
Don't let's quote this little adventure. After all, I spent half of the case as an unconscious suspect. No, Sandy, this will be an unpublished chapter from the casebook of Gregory Hood.
Greg, you got through safely that time, but you're awful lucky Masterson left that clue.
Well, yes, Harry, but of course there's always a clue somewhere if you can find it and figure it out.
Yeah, but deliver me from figuring out clues as tough as that dollar sign in the pipe shank.
Well, you could do it.
And don't kid me.
Well, sure you could. For instance, suppose you're sitting at a table.
Mm-hmm.
On the cloth, someone has drawn with a pencil not a dollar sign, but a cent sign.
Yeah.
And an arrow pointing at an empty wine glass.
Ah, light dawns. It's about Petri wine, but what about it?
Well, easy. An empty wine glass calls for some good wine, doesn't it?
Yeah, but that scent sign...
Look, Harry, if you want good wine, what is it that makes sense?
Oh, brother, was I slow on that. Well, slow or not, it does make sense to order Petri when you want good wine. Petri wine has just got to be good. You see, the Petri family has been making wine for generations now. The art of making fine wine is a heritage in the Petri family, passed on down from father to son, from father to son. So just think of all those years of skill and experience that go into making Petri wine. It's no wonder Petri wine is so good. And it's no wonder the Petri business has grown and grown until today the Petri family is America's largest independent winemaker. Yes, the making of Petri wine is a family affair. And the Petri family has every intention of keeping it just that. So you know the name Petri on a bottle of wine is more than a trademark. It's the personal assurance of the Petri family that Petri wine is and always will be good wine. The Casebook of Gregory Hood is written by Dennis Green and Anthony Boucher. Original music composed and played by Dean Fossler. Elliot Lewis plays the part of Gregory Hood, and Sanderson Taylor is played by Howard McNear. The Petri Wine Company of San Francisco, California, invites you to tune in again next week, same time, same station. The Casebook of Gregory Hood comes to you from our Hollywood studio. This is Harry Bartell saying goodnight for the Petri family. For a solid hour of exciting mystery dramas, listen every Monday on most of these same stations at 8 o'clock to Richard Davis, Private Investigator, followed immediately by The Casebook of Gregory Hood. This is the Mutual Broadcasting System.
Stand. Standard of California, on behalf of independent Chevron gas stations and Standard stations throughout the West, invites you to Let George Do It. Out of Mind, another adventure of George Valentine.
Personal notice, changes my stock and trade. If life's more sound and fury than you can stand, you got a job for me, George Valentine. Write full details.
Dear Mr. Valentine, a dark, inexplicable thing is happening in the lives of my two sisters. The mind of a man is driving them to inevitable tragedy. He came to their house as a guest and lingered on like a poisonous growth. It's a weird situation in which I find myself helpless. You may have the answer. Will you call my office so we can arrange to meet and take the suburban special to Fenton? Yours truly, Roger Winslow.
No matter how tricky it might seem, Winslow, there's always an answer to that sort of mental gymnastics.
I tell you, Valentine, this man really can read your mind.
Oh, does he wear a turban and call off the serial numbers on the bills in your wallet?
Nothing like that, Miss Brooks. He's very much the continental gallant, with just that touch of the roué women can't seem to resist.
Louvain the mentalist. Yeah, I've heard of him. But how did he get entrenched in your sister's house?
Well, that brings us to Bertie. She's the older one. 38, unmarried, frustrated, and a pushover for every cult and fad that comes her way.
Uh-huh.
She saw Louvain perform in the Fenton Civic Auditorium about a month ago, and she asked him to spend a weekend at the house. He's been there ever since.
Well, this is just a random observation, Mr. Winslow, but you seem well able to bounce Monsieur Louvain right out on his psychic phenomenon.
I tried that last weekend, but my sisters were all over me like a couple of wailing banshees. Besides, Clearview isn't my house.
But I thought you...
No, before my father died, we both decided that the house and whatever money he had should go to the girls. I'm well able to take care of myself.
Well, from what I gather, Winslow, Louvain doesn't just go around reading minds. He seems to have some kind of a hold over Sybil, too. Now, what's she like, your younger sister?
I'm afraid you're going to begin to think our family is a roster of improbable characters. Sybil has been starved for beauty ever since she got out of college. She thinks Louvain is the only man who's ever understood her frail, sensitive soul.
Oh, I know what you mean. I passed through that poetic phase, too. I thought I was another Elizabeth Barrett Browning, and
Except that you had the constitution of a horse.
Well, you could have at least said filly.
Go on, Winslow.
Well, Sybil is still young and beautiful enough for me to hope she'll desert the muse for marriage and kids before she's 30.
Mm-hmm. You said something about the inevitable tragedy. If you're talking about two jealous women fighting over a man, I don't see that I have any place in this picture, Winslow.
Well, maybe I'm over-dramatizing it, Valentine, but I'm afraid Louvain is uncovering something in my sisters that they themselves don't know exists. Something hateful and ugly, perhaps.
Have you got any reason to think that?
My father, he was a very successful doctor, tried to make Clearview a happy place, apart from the world. He built it high on the side of a mountain, a sort of symbol of the way he felt.
What do you mean?
He wanted his children to be above all the petty meannesses of the world. And now, in the person of Louvain, everything that Dad despised has come right into the house. Sybil and Bertie aren't used to being exposed to anything like that.
The poisonous growth you mentioned in your letter?
Yes. I get the feeling that Louvain just stands and listens somewhere. Every time Bertie and Sybil fly at each other over the smallest, most trivial things.
I won't let you go through with it, Sybil. I won't.
Don't shout at me. The tower room is on my side of the
house.
You
know Father would never stand to see anything altered.
Father is dead, Bertie.
Please, Miss Bertie, Miss Sybil.
Oh, please be quiet, Mr. Gumble.
Yes, ladies.
I have to live my own life. You want me to grow into something like you? An hysterical old maid?
Oh.
Why don't you slap me again, Bertie? Won't make any difference. I'll still be here to remind you of all the emotions you let shrivel up because you're afraid to live.
About that balcony again, ladies. Two men working on it, you know. Time and a half after five.
I insist that things remain the way Father left them.
Isn't it enough that we made shrines out of his consulting room and a dispensary? They're in your half of the house. I don't care. But in my house...
Father wanted the wall of the tower room to blend right in with the side of the mountain. He would have hated a balcony, an eyesore, like something out of Romeo and Juliet.
Already made French doors in the tower room for the balcony. Gotta make up your minds now.
Finish it, Mr. Kimball.
Yes, ma'am.
You stay where you are.
Yes, ma'am.
You're not fooling me, Sybil. All this sentimental posturing, your solitary walks in the moonlight, a balcony, so you can feel you're all alone between heaven and earth. All to impress Levain, isn't it? You're in love with him, admit it.
Here's my answer. Mr. Gunther.
Huh?
Go and finish the job.
Yes, Miss Sybil. Don't know what I can do tonight, but it'll get done.
You'll never have Levain, Sybil. No matter what I have to do about it.
Well, Valentine, now that you've had dinner, what do you think?
Well, I think we'd be stupid if we imagined we were fooling Levain. He doesn't believe we're just a couple of friends you brought to your sister's house for the weekend.
And my feminine intuition tells me that this war of nerves between Bertie and Sybil is going to turn into a scorcher any day now.
You know, frankly, Winslow, what this situation calls for is a combination human relations counselor and a psychiatrist. There's nothing particularly sinister about this setup. It's only too human.
I know, but
I'm afraid I'd be like the man who tries to stop a husband from beating his wife. It ends with both jumping all over him. No, thanks. I think Miss Brooks and I will be taking the first train back in the morning.
I do hope I am not intruding.
Not at all. Come in, Louvain.
Thank you. You know, it is always interesting to be present when one is being discussed. Go on, please.
How do you know you're going to like what we might say about you?
The human ego is easily satisfied. The mere sound of one's name is rewarding in itself. Incidentally, Mr. Valentine, there's an 8:10 out of Fenton in the morning.
Well, now that's just fine. Is there someone on it you want me to wave to when it leaves?
No. But you are thinking of going back to town, aren't you?
I take it this is the mentalist at work.
Or an ear at the keyhole.
You know, Miss Brooks, at first Roger here also doubted my ability to read the human mind. Nothing gives me greater pleasure than to make converts out of cynics. Suppose I tell you what you're thinking about.
Okay, but you'd better censor it as you go along.
In so many words, it is something like this. This Louvain, he is a handsome, charming rascal at that. I wonder if that is a real wave in his hair, or is he wearing a toupee?
Yes, that's part of it, but how...
Delightfully feminine. Rest assured, Sherry, this is the hair I was born with.
All right, Louvain. We don't need any more of your demonstrations.
Now, you, Mr. Valentine...
Oh, I ought to be a pushover. I've only got one thought, and it's not very feminine.
I know. You're saying to yourself, in these very words, what I would not give to sock Buster here, right in the kisser.
My feminine intuition.
You heard that, didn't you, Louvain?
How could it be helped?
Two foolish, susceptible women, each with a small fortune. You play one off against the other. Well, have you decided which one you're going to hurt?
You forget I'm in this house by invitation.
Which one would be easier to handle? I'm not going to give you a chance to decide. I'm going to...
Oh, cut it off, Winslow. Now, sit down.
I'm too sparring with him.
Don't make a martyr out of him. Use your head.
Well, have you people been trying to outdo Bertie and me?
Oh, it was nothing, Seymour. Roger was merely trying to illustrate his brotherly concern.
Oh. Well, let's clear the atmosphere right now. Roger, I'll repeat what I just told Bertie. Louvain and I love each other. We're going to get married.
Well, what do you want me to say?
Not a word. We can dispense with all the deception now. You can pay off Mr. Valentine so we can step out of our affairs.
Oh, yes. That's 8:10 in the morning, Valentine.
I got news for you, Buster. I'm staying on. I'm also a guest in this house.
You forget this is my house.
Only half of it, Sybil. And I promise we'll stay on Bertie's side.
A beautiful Saturday morning in the country, George, and nobody enjoying it except the birds and that character stretched out there on the lawn. You know, he looks beautiful in shorts.
Yeah. Levain's supposed to be replenishing his cosmic cells or something.
Look at him sipping hot milk on a day like this.
Oh, well, that's to relax his nerves, Angel. Brother, he can afford to relax. He knows Roger isn't getting anywhere arguing with Sybil. And he's just as sure Bertie's tears aren't going to change his plans.
Do you think he can really read minds, George?
Well, that isn't important one way or the other, now.
Don't mean to interrupt nothing, but anybody see Miss Sybil?
What's that?
Mark Gumpel's the name. Contractor.
That's nice.
Just taking my men off the job for the day. Wanted to make sure Sybil ain't going to change her mind about that balcony.
Well, I'm afraid she's pretty tied up at the moment.
Did what she told me this morning. Just checking.
Levain! George, look!
Yes, sir.
Good grief. What's going on? Wait.
Hurry, please!
What is it, Bertie?
What's the matter with you?
Look at me, Levain. What's the matter?
I don't know. My stomach.
Levain! Oh, darling!
Now what? Is this another one of his acts?
I came out in the lawn to talk to him, and I found him just...
Somebody
myself.
Better call a doctor. Looks like he's been poisoned.
I don't understand it, Valentine. Don't understand it at all.
What don't you understand, Dr. Adams?
Well, there's no doubt about it. Levain was poisoned. Agrafine. According to every tenant in the pharmacopoeia, he should have died almost instantly.
And he's been hanging on for hours. In other words, he's not only a mental marvel, but a medical freak.
Well, I've done everything I can for him. We'll just have to wait.
Dr. Adams, as an old friend of Dr. Winslow and his family, this will probably come as a rude shock to you, but...
I know what you're going to say. Someone in this house is guilty of attempted murder. One of John's children. It's incredible.
A man like Louvain makes incredible things happen.
Yes, I could see something like this coming. Of course, I should call the police. But perhaps if we wait and the man pulls through...
Then we could call it Tomain, the lobster Louvain had for dinner last night?
I don't know. In a situation like this, it's hard to be sure when you're doing right.
Doctor, there's a row of match bottles in the dispensary.
John's pride and joy, that dispensary. Everything's so neatly in its place.
The bottle of agrafine isn't there.
Hmm?
Whoever took it still has it.
What?
Roger, Bertie, Sybil. They were all in and out of the kitchen when the cook was warming up the milk for Levain.
Valentine, they're all nice people. I can't believe any one of them would do a thing like this, no matter what the provocation.
Oh, George, pardon me.
That's all right, Brooksy. We don't have to keep anything from the doctor.
Well, you were right, George. Someone did come back to put that bottle with the others.
Yeah, who?
Bertie.
Good heavens.
I'm afraid she knows I saw it.
If it had to be one of the three, I guess it would be Bertie. Poor, unhappy Bertie.
Well, we might be able to say that puzzle was cleared up. Except for one thing.
What's that?
Well, didn't you notice, Brooksy? There's another bottle missing in that row.
What was it, Valentine?
The label on the shelf right under the empty space says... Ferulic acid.
Why, that's even more deadly than agrafine.
Which leaves us with a question we'd better answer real fast. Who's walking around with that bottle?
We'll return to tonight's adventure of George Valentine in just a moment. Have you read about it? Heard about it? It's that new, improved Chevron Supreme gasoline. Through constant laboratory research and road testing, Standard of California has perfected Chevron Supreme to give modern cars peak performance. For today's high-compression engines, you can't buy a better gasoline. It's specially blended to assure faster starts, faster warm-ups, extra pep in traffic, and ping-free power on hills. And it's a premium-quality gasoline that's climate-tailored. No matter which temperature or altitude zone of the West you're driving in, you may be sure new Chevron Supreme gets the best out of your car. Try a tankful tomorrow. Ask for new Chevron Supreme at Standard stations and at independent Chevron gas stations where they say and mean, we take better care of your car. Now back to tonight's adventure of George Valentine. Two sisters, jealously squabbling over a man. The man in question, a most unsavory character. But after all, you're not writing a paper on why women prefer heels. But before you can bow out, the man, Louvain, is poisoned. And what's more, while he lingers on, you learn there's still another bottle of deadly poison circulating through the house. If, like George Valentine, you believe in direct action, you don't pull any punches when you talk to the brother of the two ladies involved.
Yes, Winslow, it was Bertie who thought Louvain's milk should be fortified with a liberal shot of poison.
What makes you so sure?
I'm afraid I saw her going in and out of your father's dispensary, Roger. I'm sorry.
I see. Well, Louvain isn't dead yet. No one need ever know if he doesn't...
Oh, look, I gotta talk to Bertie. You know where she is?
Yes, I spoke to her a few minutes ago. I needn't tell you what state of mind she's in. And now, to upset her even more...
Never mind that. Where did she go?
Strange. She said she was going upstairs to the tower room.
What?
Catch a breath of fresh air on the new balcony.
That is strange. After they've been rowing over it so much... George, where are you going?
The tower room.
Get away from me. You have no right to stop me.
Come away from those doors, Bertie. Now, don't open them. You heard me.
Oh, no, you take your hands off me.
George, I can't find the light.
Never mind that. Just help me with her.
Okay.
Get hold of her arms, will you?
If you don't leave me alone, I'll...
Scratch my eyes out. Now, look, Bertie. Cut it out. Bertie, what's the matter? You've gone crazy.
Oh, Roger.
It's all right. Now, it's all over.
It's never going to be over. Not now. Lane's going to die. I killed him.
You didn't. You couldn't. Look, Bertie, it's better if you didn't say anything. At least for the time being.
There isn't anything to say that you don't already know. Miss Brooks saw me putting the poison back on the shelf in the dispensary. I was just going to confess. In my own way. But you had to stop me.
Hasn't there been enough grief and trouble in this house without you jumping off balconies? Go on, Brooksy, take her to her room. Okay. Ask Dr. Adams to give her something to quiet her down.
Yeah, come along, Bertie.
Oh, Roger!
I won't let anything happen to you, Bertie. Now go on.
Yes, Roger.
I think you'd better turn in too, Winslow, and get some rest.
You know I couldn't sleep. You just want to get rid of me. What's on your mind, Valentine?
Louvain. When a guy gets a lethal dose of poison, he ought to drop dead.
Deadly Poisons, Their Effects and Properties, by Sebastian Kinsler, M.D. You want to finish that tonight, George?
I'm almost finished now, Angel. Hand me that pad, will you?
Well.
Shouldn't every doctor's dispensary have a couch? Now, here's a book I'd like to curl up with. The Human Foot, Its Anatomy and Pathology. Darling, what are you doing? What are you scribbling?
Brooksy, I have just verified a universal truth.
Oh, goody.
Every cause has an effect, and by the same token, vice versa.
You know, you got something there, mister? Whatever it is. But if you don't break it down so that I can...
Oh, Roger, I was wondering when you were going to show up.
I couldn't let Bertie take the blame for something I did, could I?
Hey, what's going on here?
You'd better put that bottle of ferulic acid back on the shelf before anybody finds out who took it.
You don't seem surprised. I said I poisoned Louvain. I put this stuff in his milk this morning.
Here, Brooksy. Put this bottle back where it belongs.
Yes, but... Oh, okay.
Bertie tried to take the blame because she thought I did it. Even tried to kill herself. I'm not going to risk that happening again.
But she did poison Louvain, just as you did.
What?
Both Bertie and Roger?
She used agraffine. And you, Winslow, you let him have ferulic acid. Dr. Adams diagnosed agraffine poisoning because it was the stronger dose.
Well, that's insane, Valentine. He couldn't possibly have lived through that.
Yeah. He should have dropped dead twice. So let's go upstairs and see if he's making any concessions to what's expected from ordinary human beings.
Can't you see that I'm ill? Call Dr. Adams.
George, I hope you know what you're doing.
Come on, Buster, sit up.
Maybe Adams should be in on this, Valentine.
Louvain, you'll never improve on the death scene from Camille. The act is over.
Please, go away.
Now, look, I've had just about enough out of you. You're nothing but a two-bit exhibitionist, but you're dangerous. While you wallow around up here in bed, things are happening to people's lives.
Really?
Bertie tried to go away with herself. Sybil's outside somewhere, walking up and down, worrying about you. Dr. Adams is neglecting his practice, waiting for you to decide between life and death. And all the time, you've been no sicker than if you'd swallowed a bad oyster.
Don't tell me he's been faking all this time.
Why, I ought to drag you out of
you
that
bed.
You
are not going to do anything, Roger. No one is going to do anything. I'm sorry. I underestimated you, Valentine.
Don't let it worry you, friend.
But tell me, how did you discover that the two poisons, agrafine and ferulic acid, cancel each other?
I looked it up, just as you did.
I happened to see Roger leaving the dispensary. Since hardly anyone ever goes in there, I thought I'd tell you. Look, I noticed that there were two bottles missing, so out of curiosity, I checked up on their properties. You see, I was sure they were going to be used to make my departure from Clearview quite a permanent one.
I suppose you found that out by reading mine.
In this case, that was not necessary, Miss Brooks. After everything that happened, I suspected that my morning glass of milk would provide Birdie and Roger with the opportunity they wanted. When I saw each of them go in and out of the kitchen, well, there was no doubt about it.
It was 1,000-to-1 chance that they should have picked those two particular poisons, one an antidote to the other. But if they had killed you, Levain, it would have been something you brought on yourself. You know, you've asked for something like this ever since you came into this house.
But now you're going to get out, Levain. If you don't, I will kill you. But this time I won't use anything but my hands.
I'll amplify what I said before, Roger. You're not going to do anything except what I tell you. Roger, get Birdie and meet me in the tower room.
Why?
I would like to have a little family conference before Sybil gets back. I would rather not have her know how unscrupulous I can really be.
Before you call for the spotlight, Louvain, maybe I ought to remind you of something.
What is that, Valentine?
There isn't a person in this house who wouldn't be willing to swear you weren't poisoned and the dispensary door had never been opened.
Now you are underestimating me. I poured off a little of the milk before I drank it. I have it to be analyzed whenever the occasion calls for it.
Why did I bring you into this house? You're not human.
None of that, Birdie. Please.
Well, here is what I am going to do. My self-esteem would suffer badly if I did not take advantage of my improved position after 2 attempts on my life.
George, can't you make him get to the point?
You'd better, Louvain. Sybil will be back any minute. And she'll be up here in the tower room looking for us.
I shall, of course, marry Sybil. Sorry, Birdie. But then we'll always find room somewhere in the house for you. I shall expect you not to tell my future wife anything about our conversation here tonight. Now, about the financial arrangements.
I was wondering when you were going to get to that.
Naturally, I shall have Sybil's half of the estate. But I know that you and Birdie will be very happy to add to that, generously. Because I've spared you all scandal and unpleasantness. Roger, you are the spokesman for the family. What do you say to my terms?
Valentine, what can I do?
Tell him you're not buying any of it.
People have lived through worse things than what happened here today, Roger. Let him shoot his mouth off.
You know the holiday the papers would have with this story. We'd never live it down.
And Sybil, still in love with him. He'd make her hate us for what we did. She'd never believe anything about blackmail.
All right, Louvain. I know when I don't have an out. So...
Where is everybody? Dr. Adams said... Oh, Louvain, darling. You're all better.
Yes, of course, Sybil.
Thank heaven. I was so frantic.
Oh, all that talk about poison, so much nonsense. It was nothing more glamorous than tourmaline.
And all is sweetness and light once again.
Yes, I was wondering about this conclave in the middle of the night.
Oh, just to congratulate us, my dear. Even Birdie wishes us the best now. Don't you? Don't answer, my dear. Let me read your mind.
Oh, another performance yet.
Oh, Birdie, how can you be thinking of Sybil's new balcony at a time like this?
At least let my thoughts be my own.
Oh, Birdie, I meant to tell you...
Life's just beginning for me in this lovely place. I owe myself a view of what shall be mine for years to come.
Louvain!
When I need no!
You,
step out.
Louvain! No! George! Oh, dear Lord!
There is no balcony. Nothing out there.
He said he was reading my mind. I thought the balcony was there. I honestly did.
I was trying to explain. This morning I ordered Mr. Gumple to tear it down.
Jeepers, George, I'll be glad to get back to town.
Yeah?
I don't think I'll ever forget that sight. Louvain stepping out into space like that.
Well, fake or genius, he certainly read Bertie's mind. You couldn't have expected him to prove it more conclusively.
Darling?
Hmm?
I'd feel a lot better right now if you could read my mind.
Well, let's see now. Oh, I get it.
Exactly what I was thinking of. How'd you ever do it?
Guesswork, Brooksy, guesswork. When you closed your eyes like that, it could have been that you were just, sleepy.
Motorists, want to put spring in your driving? Then let me remind you about that new Chevron Supreme gasoline. It's specially blended to give your car faster starts, faster warm-ups, new alertness in traffic, and on hills, all the ping-free power you could hope for. In fact, for today's high-compression engines, you can't buy a better gasoline. You'll like the way new Chevron Supreme is specially tailored to the West's different altitude and temperature zones. That means wherever you drive, new Chevron Supreme gets the best out of your car. Try this new motoring thrill tomorrow. Get a tank full at an independent Chevron gas station or at a standard station where they say, and mean, we take better care of your car. Next week, when a somewhat breathless George Valentine rushes into a lavish apartment to meet Brooksy, we'll hear...
Hey, what goes here, Brooksy? Has Nick been over there like that all that time?
I don't know, George. I just found him that way. Where have you been?
Now, somebody wanted that briefcase so bad they floated me out of town.
The pictures.
We'll get to that. Right now, I want to find out if Nick here knows something we ought to know. Hey, Buster, snap out of it. Come on, sit up in that chair.
George, he's...
One of our friends fixed it so Nick will be stone cold on the hottest day in July.
Tonight's adventure of George Valentine has been brought to you by Standard of California on behalf of independent Chevron gas stations and Standard stations throughout the West. Robert Bailey is starred as George with Francis Robinson as Brooksy. Let George Do It was written by David Victor and Herbert Little Jr. and directed by Don Clark. Also heard in the cast were Jay Novello, Louvain, Ken Harvey as Roger, Frank Hale as Bertie, Doreen Tuttle as Sybil, Don Messick as Mr. Gumple, and Ralph Moody as Dr. Adams. The music is composed and presented by Eddie Dunstetter. Your announcer, John Heaston. Listen again next week, same time, same station, to Let George Do It. This is the Mutual Don Lee Broadcasting System.
That's it for Case Closed this week. I hope you enjoyed our selections this time. You can find more from Let George Do It, the casebook of Gregory Hood, past episodes of Case Closed, and thousands of other old-time radio episodes at relicradio.com. You'll also find all the other podcasts there, our Shoutcast stream, and you can donate through the website as well if you'd like to help keep this all going. Thanks to those who have. Thanks for joining me today. I'll be back next Wednesday with This Is Your FBI and Barry Craig, Confidential Investigator, on another episode of Case Closed.